Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. This is my dad, Ted.
Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Knightsky. Have you ever had a week where it actually felt like everything was lining up, where there was just a constant theme each day, multiple times over and over, and it kind of nagged at you? Well, it happened to me this week in a big way, and it sparked this episode. Everywhere I went, I kept seeing how relationships all around me were filled with either conflict, contradictions, or harmony. I became so attuned to it that I actually started asking people about their relationships to see if I could get some secret sauce out of some harmonious people that I was working with. Like many of you, I thrive when the conditions are harmonious, when people can finish each other's sentences, when people can predict their world, and when conflict is not a confrontation of what we dislike, but instead a confrontation of care so that we can improve. This is why I think so many of us are constantly reading about how to deal with, manage, and accept people who are not like us. Meeting people where they are at is a journey in and of itself. So often, it is a lot easier to just blow past people who are not like us and move on. But it is not the best approach to get the most out of the environment around us, and especially those who have a lot to offer. However, we may not know how to get their thoughts out in an environment filled with people who are the opposite of ourselves. Let's take a look at a couple of mindsets and strategies to get people working together with more efficiencies by eliminating many of the barriers to being an effective team. Speed to trust is critical, and that speed comes from having a common language amongst the team or the people. However, for that to begin, there has to be a recognition of each other's positive contributions and a willingness to accept our differences. Before I get into a few mindsets and strategies, I want to remind you of two things and then tell you a story. Remember that our mindset is that of a buffalo, right? So we run into the storms that we are facing, and we do so with optimism and a mindset that we can get it done, because we know that the faster we get into that storm, the faster we get out of it. We don't walk away from the storms. That just keeps us in them longer. Second, we lead with two key behaviors, reflection and empathy, thinking about what we're doing and positioning ourselves in the shoes of those we serve and those around us. And that is the emphasis of today's conversation. Here's how this entire thing started for me. I was at a business breakfast. It was 8 a.m., and considering I eat breakfast around 6 a.m., I think that's considered a brunch for me, but we were seated at a table and everyone was socially distanced. As we were discussing taking over the world or whatever it was, I was constantly distracted by a cute couple sitting at the table next to us. It was clearly a husband and wife, and I kept hearing the man laugh, and I'd look over, and as a person with a squirrel's attention span can tell you, this became a curiosity for me that I could not stop paying attention to. Mostly because his laugh was a hearty laugh, and the wife looked totally deadpanned each time he was laughing. I was curious because they were clearly a couple of seasoned citizens. I assumed they were in their 70s. The husband was wearing a knit cap rolled up over his ears like a longshoreman and looked exactly like Einstein, white mustache and all. She was a very petite, pretty, and skinny lady. They both had glasses, and throughout the breakfast, I felt like I was watching one of my wife's Hallmark movies. They sat next to each other. We're picking off each other's plates. He'd go to grab something from her plate and she'd slap his hand and he'd giggle, and then she would look at him over her reading glasses endearingly. They would talk and stop and talk and stop, and they both had their iPhones out on the table. They actually kind of looked like a couple of teenagers on their phones, swiping up and down, scrolling all over the place. She'd see something and show him, and they would talk, and I imagined it'd be a picture or a video of a grandchild, and he'd do the same, and sometimes they'd laugh, and sometimes they'd just smile, and sometimes they'd shake their heads. Both of them looking at their phones. I have to be honest here. I was so distracted by this endearing couple that I missed most of the breakfast conversation. I was simply entranced by these two. At one point, I told the other two at my table that I was really curious about them. They glanced over and looked back at me like, it's a couple of grandparents having breakfast. Well, what's the big deal? When we concluded our breakfast and wrapped up our business, I said my goodbyes to the guys, and then I put on my face mask and I walked over to the table. Yeah, I'm that guy, the one who talks to you at the hardware store, gives you unsolicited advice about a problem, compliments you and your children in a restaurant, or asks you where you bought a vintage Duran Duran t-shirt. Just this time, my family wasn't around me to grab my wrist or try and stop me, or Gracie giving me a violent eye roll for talking to strangers. Anyway, I walked up and inquired, and I asked them a question. They looked at me, and I'm guessing that my blue suit, shirt, and tie made me look harmless or like their banker, so they said, sure, what do you want to know? I stated that I noticed that they were really enjoying breakfast, and then I asked, what's your secret? The husband looked at me, and he said, she makes me laugh. And then she said, he traveled a lot. He then said, see? And he started to laugh. I fell in love with him in an instant. She had a sense of humor like me, because she said things with a very serious and stern look on her face, but then waited for my reaction. As soon as my eyes smiled above my mask, she started to laugh along with him, and then they told me that they were in their upper 80s and had been together for almost 60 years. They were proud of that, and as they were talking to me, he reached to grab some raisins off her plate, and she slapped his little old hand again. He giggled like a kid, and then I said, okay, all right, seriously, what's your secret? I mean, I'm thinking to myself, my wife and Megan and I have been together since 1992. We're going on half the time that they've been together. I work with a colleague who I've worked with since 2004. Now, both of them would probably hit me for many reasons, but these two and their clear acceptance for each other was not only visible, but you could actually sense their love. She started, and what she said was, about 20 years ago, we figured it out. Well, at that point, I did the math in my head. That was 40 years after they got together. It took them 40 years to figure it out. She then stated that after all their years together, raising a family, traveling, him traveling for work and coming home, and then one day announcing that he would retire, well, then there they were, just them, together, all of the time. And it was then that they both came to a realization. And this is what she said. We had to accept each other's faults and not judge them, but live with them. I looked around the room and thought, is Oprah here? What? I mean, talk about a ton of wisdom in a single sentence. Let me say it for you again. They had to accept each other's faults and not judge them, but live with them. It took them 40 years of likely bickering, occasional resentment, and I'm sure a couple of nights on the couch after a spat to figure out what seems so obvious. But it's almost always impossible. Acceptance and empathy. They told me a few more stories about their family and kids, and then I thanked them and walked back to my friend Joe, and he was like, did you really just spend 10 minutes interrogating them on their relationship? And I said, yeah, and I learned a ton. What I learned continued through the week, and that is when we collaborate or serve others, we take too long to try to figure out the other person. Some teams, colleagues, classrooms, and boardrooms sit in a perpetual standoff of trying not to address each other's behaviors, and we try hard to avoid hurting each other's feelings. Now, I am not at all suggesting we hurt each other's feelings. Quite the opposite, actually. In our efforts to not address problems, we are unintentionally creating problems, hurting people around us. We are creating insane narratives about each other's motivations, and we lead in a strange effort not to rock the boat. Instead, what we should be doing is trying to synchronize all of our paddling. Well, here is your strategy to immediately address your issues. You need to employ a speed-to-trust tactic that allows for a common language to emerge amongst each other. A language that has indicators that allow people to safely say things like hit the pause button or challenge ideas without conflict, expose your weaknesses, or, and most importantly, empathize with those that are overly patient or overly zealous. How do you do it? You take the time to identify each other's qualities. Have a conversation that outlines those qualities and behaviors and identify each other through a neutral language that allows for you to be curt, kind, and honest. Now, I have two suggestions for you. As a team, a class, a group, whatever, I believe that it is critical for you to be able to identify where a behavior is coming from instead of wondering, why are they doing that to me? Every team or group in an effort to get to high functioning needs a language, and here are two ways to get there. Now, the first one's a really good tool that's used all over the world, and as a team, I would suggest that you use the Gallup Strength Finder. It is a powerful way to get people talking, empathizing, delegating, understanding, and addressing the conflicts that are amongst you. You grow to understand that there are people who are good at things and others who would rather get a paper cut than make a presentation or develop a strategy. However, we often expect people to do things that they don't have the will or skill to do. And instead of proactively identifying what people bring to the table, we give them tasks that cause frustration, resentment, disengagement, and anger. In its place, we continue to harp on people, complain about them, and eventually isolate them, opposed to recognizing what is it they are good at. Why does that person never speak? Why can't they react to the situation in front of them? Why is it that they seem to have no motivation to get this done? Too often we ask ourselves questions like that in a judgmental mode instead of an empathetic mode. Well, a person like me, who on the StrengthFinder is strategic, a strategic communicator, who activates and believes as well as focuses on the future, well, people like me come across to others as dreamers, unorganized and uncaring about the current work. And you know what? I am. But you pair me properly with someone who's analytical, an arranger, disciplined, focused, and a maximizer? Well, then all I have to do is set vision, sell the enthusiasm, bring the people together, and get out of that other person's way, and then it happens. The team is successful. I know that sounds crazy simple, but it is. But if you put five people in a room together just like me, which I've been in, oh man, there is likely to be hours of dreaming and talking and dreaming and talking and talking and enthusiasm, and then we'll all leave fired up, but nothing will happen. Or you put five analytical people in a room together, which is a room I will just walk right past, and they will be paralyzed by perfection. Balance, language, empathy, and understanding of each other is critical. If you've never taken the Gallup StrengthFinder, I highly recommend it and read the book. I also strongly urge you to do it with others and those that you serve. Have someone else facilitate that conversation and watch as behaviors start to change. It becomes safe to say, we don't need any more futuristic thinking. We need to get moving on the implementation. Now, that's not offensive to people like me. It's permission for people like me to leave the room and get out of the way. Plus, I'll go find another room to walk into and start dreaming up ideas with another group. The second idea is this, the DISC profiler. Now, this is kind of ancient to many, but I want you to think about it in the new modern view. My book club and I just finished reading and discussing the book Surrounded by Idiots. Good luck forgetting the name of that book. Anyway, the book is an interesting approach to the four colors that make up the DISC profile and most of our own personalities. And the title comes from the idea that we tend to lack empathy for everyone around us. And as a result, we believe that we are surrounded by idiots. There are four key colors, and our group was pretty well balanced. However, we had some fascinating conversations, and one of our conclusions was that trust accelerates if we can have a language amongst each other. But we also thought that we have to be cautious not to justify other people's behaviors because everyone then knows their categories. Here are the four categories: the red, yellow, green, and blue. Blue is compliant. They're rule followers who are cautious and not in a hurry to make change. Green is stable. They are calm, kind, patient, and supportive. Reds are dominant. They're quick thinkers that maximize in an effort to be in control, who are quick in mind and mouth. And yellow are inspiring, quick to respond, get involved quickly. They are optimistic and a little impulsive. Now, of those four, with basically any deep understanding, without any deep understanding, which are you? One of the things that some people get upset about when we do activities like this is they feel they're getting pegged into a bias as a result of being more dominant in one category than another. But the reality is the reality. And if we are aware of where we fall, it can be very powerful for a team to have a language and be quicker to identify why there is conflict. For example, red. Take a red, the dominant types. Put two of them in a room together and ask them what they want to eat for lunch. They'll get into a battle. A red and a green in a room, and you ask them the same question, the red will say, tacos, and the green will say, okay. Greens and blues together might say, you pick. No, you pick. No, you pick. I don't want you upset. You pick. I don't care where we eat. Get a red and a blue together, the blue will eat whatever was decided with and may complain about it later. A red and a yellow? Dangerous taco combination. The red says, tacos, and the yellow says, I'll drive. I know a great unlimited taco buffet. Let's go, everybody. Now, in the context of a team, four of any single color together, well, it's a disaster. Yet people tend to try to be around others like them. And as a result, a silent conflict emerges. Again, paralyzation can emerge if you don't want to address it. So speed to trust through a process that gets people together quicker. We are truly attracted to opposites, and then we grow together. But too often it takes too long with too much conflict, too much lack of courage, and it's at the expense of everyone around us. That little Einstein guy and his wife at the breakfast place, they told me it took 40 years to figure out that they had to accept their differences. 40 years! I'm guessing that her incredible wit may have been biting at times, and until he accepted that she was just picking on him for her own enjoyment, he probably began to enjoy it more. But taken literally, it created conflict. Imagine tomorrow, meeting with your team, having a conversation and identifying each other's strengths and tendencies, then having a language to confront each other from a place of care. What's stopping you? Now, one cautionary tale. Some of you listening are like, yeah, I've done this before. Well, if you do it again, you have to live it. You have to put somebody in charge of it. You have to take time to identify each other's characteristics and then use it. That's what gets people frustrated, is when you do it and you never use it again. If you do that, well, that'll put the compliance people over the edge. It'll hurt the greens' feelings. It'll deflate the yellows and the reds. Well, they don't care. They've already moved along. They need the anchors of others to make sure that they continue to live through those expectations. So this week, find a way to increase your empathy for others. Find a process or a tool. There are quite literally hundreds of these out there. And work with those you care for to design the conditions so that each of you has permission to be honest, supportive, and empathetic towards each other. So let's do some smart thinking. Describe your current culture's ability to confront each other in an order to be excellent. List your strengths or colors. And describe one way you can support greater empathy amongst those you love and serve. That's it. That's the Smart Thinking Podcast. Hey, as always, thank you for listening, and please share and rate this podcast episode on any of your platforms. Also, thank you to the Well Pennies for the great music. Now, in the next TH3, I'll have a diagram that shows the four types of human behaviors from Thomas Erickson's book, Surrounded by Idiots. I'd also like to put a shout out to our communications team at CISA 6 for the great work helping me, especially this futuristic red guy, create all this stuff. Thanks, Lisa and Jill. Finally, I made one mistake when I spoke to that cute couple at breakfast. I never asked their names. I was so selfishly enthralled by how they were acting that I forgot to ask. I have my entire life been curious about happy people, successful people, and great families. I get lost in my own selfish journey to improve my own world, so lost that I forget little things like, what's your name? I wish I knew their names, because I would have loved to have them on the podcast. 60 years with the same person makes you an expert in relationships, perseverance, forgiveness, tenacity, and courage. And those, well, those are the qualities of great teams. They never give up on each other. They have courage to confront each other. They forgive in order to move forward because they accept each other. And they have the tenacity to push through when life or the task gets tough. And finally, and most importantly, they have the courage to be loyal to the mission. Teams, colleagues, and life is a constant opportunity for improvement. And like buffaloes, we have to charge into our challenges. I imagine that that wonderful couple had plenty of years that they walked away from what was bothering them. But ultimately, in order to be successful, they just charged into it and accepted a very simple fact. We are all at our best when we agree to love the people around us for who they are and not who we want them to be.
I can't be found, and I feel the weight of it all over town, and I'm so far away, but I get a little closer every day. You're my star, you're my shaker, you're my ground, my aviator, and I say it's alright.